You're with Virginia on ABC Radio Melbourne.
Daniel Comensoli is a policy analyst in the LGBTIQ health and wellbeing area. And if that surname of his, Comensoli, is familiar to you, well, there's a good reason for that. He's also the nephew of the Catholic Archbishop of Melbourne, Peter Comensoli. He's written a piece for The Age newspaper today in which he speaks about his experience of coming out as a gay man, but also wants to talk about, as many other people have been in the last couple of days and continue this morning, his response to the Change or Suppression Conversion Practices Prohibition Bill that is before the Parliament this morning. He speaks to it from a particular position of being a gay man, but having one of the most high-profile opponents to that bill in his family. Daniel Comensoli, it's good to talk to you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for speaking to me.
Are you particularly close with your uncle?
I am. I have a lot of respect for my uncle, and we get along well, but obviously our relationship can be quite challenging at times. Because of these differences that we have, they're not just mere political differences, but a deep conflict of values. And I think that's why I wrote the piece in The Age yesterday, because once again, we've seen my uncle being quite a prominent opponent of, you know, a legislative change that really impacts people like me and my friends and my colleagues. And I just thought, enough's enough. It's time that, you know, we need to listen to survivors of these harmful conversion practices. And I think I was just really angry and frustrated that today, still, we have, you know, this misinformation campaign and this fear-mongering still occurring whenever we discuss issues about our lives and our relationships.
What did he say to you, if anything, when you came out as a young gay man?
Yeah, so I mentioned this in the op-ed that it was very respectful, but obviously he advised me that there was a difference between my sexuality and having sex. And I mentioned that was, it was a bit of encouragement from him to not have sex with other men, because as I'm sure your listeners understand, the Catholic Church teaches that homosexual acts are gravely disordered and a sin. And at the time, I didn't really understand the implications of what he said. But then over time, I realised that that's something that would not have been said to my other two brothers or two sisters. So and I stated that whilst that particular example is not, it doesn't fall under the definition of conversion practices per se, it really does provide the foundation for conversion practices to proliferate, that kind of theological position.
That tricky theological separation that the Catholic Church has always made between the thought and the deed. You write in your piece, "I realised my uncle's comments about not actually having sex were a thinly veiled nudge encouraging me not to have sex with other men." So you say it wasn't a conversion practice, but something like the beginnings of persuasion?
Yes, yes. And I think that's what's at play here. The conversion practices that that are happening, these practices are grounded in the view that, these identities are inherently distorted and against nature, etc. So these kinds of beliefs really inform these practices to occur, and I think that's why I feel so passionately about ensuring that this bill is passed this week.
But we're hearing from so many different individuals and groups, and I mean deeply contrasting groups and individuals, who say they don't want to be prevented and therefore criminalised in having what they see as just a really important, close and intimate conversation, which might go along the lines of, "Are you really sure? Or have you not thought about this? Or have you considered the consequences of that?" And they fear that the bill prevents them doing that. It criminalises that behaviour, and they want to be able to do that. Are those conversations not important as part of the process too, with people you know and trust?
Yes, and I think those kinds of points really represent a deep misunderstanding of what the bill does. And I've noticed that the AMA, or the Victorian branch of the AMA, has come out today with some reservations.
That's right.
Of the bill. And I actually think their concerns are misplaced. And what is criminalised here is not conversations. What is criminalised is injury caused by conversion practices. So the bill criminalises causing injury or serious injury, not anyone caught trying to suppress or change someone's sexuality. And that is the crucial difference here, because I think that is at the heart of the ACL and others' misinformation campaign. And my understanding is that, you know, Victorian law already has the same criminal penalties for causing injury or serious injury. And what this bill really does is just mirror those penalties. And, you know, conversion therapies within health services are already prohibited. So I think that's a really important distinction. We're not criminalising prayer. We're not trying to criminalise conversations. It's really the practices that cause serious injury that are going to be criminalised.
But your uncle is the Catholic Archbishop of Melbourne, as a signatory mm-hmm. to a letter calling yes. for a halt on the procession of the bill, which we spoke about yesterday. He says he also rejects conversion therapy, and he also wants to, you know, protect people from that. They have no problem with the idea of the bill in that respect. Do you believe him when he says that?
It's hard because I guess we saw this in the marriage equality campaign as well, and also recently with the debate around, you know, religious schools having the right to fire LGBT teachers and expel LGBT students. So what we had in that debate was my uncle and others saying, oh, we don't utilise this exemption in anti-discrimination law, but we still want to keep the law. And you can't have it both ways. And I think that's what we're seeing here in this debate, is that, you know, they state that they reject these harmful practices, which is good, but then conveniently are, you know, working very hard in opposition to this bill. And again, like I said, I think their concerns are unfounded, and I think it's time to step aside and let this bill pass, because at the heart of this bill, it really has been informed by the hard work of survivors, and I think that's who we need to listen to during this debate, and not people in institutions of power who have historically been quite hostile to our identities and relationships.
Sure, but when you have, the, as you say, the head of the AMA and the person to whom we spoke this morning, the chair of the Victorian branch of the Royal Australian and New Zealand College of Psychiatrists, when they all say that they have grave reservations about how this bill might criminalise what they do carefully and specifically as clinicians, then I suppose you have to listen to them. We're going to keep having that conversation, Daniel. Mm-hmm. But just finally this morning, if you're uncle, the Archbishop of Melbourne, is listening today, what would you say to him?
Hi, Uncle Peter. hope you're having a good week. Look, I just want to say that, I love you and I respect you, but please listen to survivors and people who want this bill passed. It will save lives and it will really help foster a more inclusive and affirming Victoria for LGBTIQ plus people. And this is something that is really important to me. And I think there is nothing to fear with this bill being passed. So I really encourage you to support it when it is introduced in the Upper House this week.
Daniel Comensoli, good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Policy analyst Daniel Comensoli, who is also the nephew of the Catholic Archbishop of Melbourne, Peter Comensoli.